The security situation in northern Afghanistan is on the agenda of Afghan parliamentarians more than ever lately, and there are quite obvious reasons for that. Situation in Badakhshan is serious. Few days ago, Kunduz was in serious trouble. Faryab has also been in trouble for some time now. Parliamentarians were also speaking about deteriorating security situation in rest of the provinces in Afghanistan that are Badghis, Saripul, Jawzjan. All of these events have occurred in northern Afghanistan, as you see, with borders to Central Asian countries. In all of those attacks or insurgency, we have also heard Central Asian militants are playing some kind of role. Today, so we aim to discuss this subject, the role of Central Asian militants in recent fighting in Afghanistan, also their size and the threat they pose to Afghanistan, also to Central Asian countries. To discuss the subject, we have Shinkai Zahin Kahukhil from Kabul and Bruce Panier, who is Central Asian expert of Radio Free Europe. Radio Liberty is with us. Abu Bakr Siddiqui, who is Afghanistan and Pakistan expert with Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, is joining me in the studio. I am Mohammed Tahir, Director of Turkmen Service of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, again. So, to set the scene, I want to play a few segments from Afghan officials who are usually reluctant to speak about these matters, but they did so in few occasions. Here is Mohammed Hanif Atmar, National Security Advisor of President Ghani, speaking in Afghan Parliament on May 5 about situation in North, pointing at recent events.
We are not dealing only with local enemies. Our fight in northern and eastern Afghanistan is against global and regional terrorist groups. Aim of these terrorist groups are not limited only with groups inside of Afghanistan. Their aim also includes the region and beyond borders of Afghanistan. They are posing major threat to the region, also to our neighbors.
Later in his speech, Mr. Atmar also said that Daesh, which is the Arabic name for Islamic State, is present in Afghanistan and they aim to threaten Central Asia. Here he had to say,
Daesh سازمان تروریستی منطقه‌ای و جهانی شد.
Daesh is a major global and regional terrorist organization. They have special interest in Afghanistan. One of the reasons why Daesh is interested in the country is that they want to threaten Central Asia and the rest of our neighbors.
So, to put these comments in perspective, let's go to Badakhshan and role of Central Asian militants in recent fighting there. A few days ago, head of Afghan National Army for Northern Afghanistan, General Ghulam Haider Haideri, who is in charge of Shaheen 209 Division of Afghan Army, pointed at increasing number of Central Asian militants in Badakhshan. Here, he had to say,
Lately, foreign terrorists are gathering in Badakhshan. Those terrorists include Chechens, Tajiks, even Kazakhs and Uzbekistanis from the group of Jandallah. Not only the terrorists, but they also bring their wives and kids. From last 1 year, they are engaged in actions in Khostak that are against the government. They specialize in making bombs and train suicide bombers.
So there are several messages in his comment. One is about skill of those terrorists. Second, intention of militants. Hear what he had to say later about what the Central Asian militants are doing in Badakhshan and what they are coming for and what they are aimed to in the future.
They want to find their way to Central Asia to destabilize the region. They are engaged in smuggling of narcotics. They take tax from the local mineral resources company, and that is how they fund their activities. They have managed to create insecurity in northern part of Badakhshan.
Unfortunately, we don't have anyone from another province in serious turbulence. That's Faryab province in northern Afghanistan. If you listen to parliamentarians from there, it's like especially Bashir Ahmad Tayanch, we just spoke to him a few days ago. He's from Faryab province. He had special concerns about presence of Central Asian militants and what they are doing in his province, in Faryab province. Here he had to say to us.
Bizim Faryab vilayetinde 1.5 ila 2.000 talib var diye bizim tahminimiz var.
Our estimates suggest that there are between 1,500 to 2,000 Taliban militants in Faryab province. Nearly 50 to 100 of them are foreign fighters. But their number is not important, because if one of them is killed in making explosives, he can train hundreds of people, and this is what they are doing.
This was, these segments were just to put the discussion we are going to have today into some perspective. But let's talk first of all what's happening in northern Afghanistan in an area which is close to Central Asia there. Ms. Shenki, you are in Kabul and you are in the middle of this discussion. What is going wrong in northern Afghanistan lately?
As everybody mentioned about this police group, I think the Taliban extremists, Daesh, whatever it is, this group is not only creating a problem for Afghan or Afghanistan, but this kind of always used by the regional or international mafia, terrorists, ethnic, whatever all the groups, they are using for their own purpose. If you're talking about the southern part and the northern part, or a part of Afghan, also part of this terrorist attack, these people are the Taliban. And Taliban now they change the color of their turban and flag and change Daesh and supporting the international movement of terrorism, which they created for different purposes of different stakeholders. So we were always trying to convince our own Afghan that it said that extremism or Taliban, which is always the tool for others, is not belong to the southern part, but it will also knock the door of every Afghan in every part of the country. And see how that international terrorists like the Chechens or the Uzbek or the Tajik or Afghan or Pakistani or Arabs, they will jointly work and they will support each other movement or a terrorist group to protect and help each other to exist. So northern part is not only to bother Afghanistan for some time, but also how to pave the way for other terrorists to enter the other part of the world, which is the Central Asia, or maybe the other part of Afghanistan, which is a neighborhood with Iran or with China. So this is having such a terrorist activity or action in northern Afghanistan also how to, it also suffers signals for other parts of the world that nowhere is safe from these people and they are going to cross Afghanistan to reach the other parts of the world as well.
Right. Abu Bakr, you are following that region closely. And since you are originally from the tribal region of Pakistan, and some Afghan officials also saying the part of the reason why security situation in northern Afghanistan is deteriorating is because of Pakistan's operation in Fatah against those militants. From your point of view, what is happening in northern Afghanistan and what is happening and why it is happening?
I think what is happening in Afghanistan since the collapse of the Afghan communist regime is what we can call a regional conflict formation, which means that the conflict in Afghanistan, primarily between government and or factions that were fighting each other during the civil war, it has also very strong regional dimensions. And one of those dimensions is this Central Asian dimension. We know that since early 1990s, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, there were a number of Islamic radicals, Central Asian Islamic radicals who came to Afghanistan, were partly inspired by Afghan militant groups or jihadist groups, and that eventually evolved into the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan. Now, the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan was in close alliance with the Taliban regime. Their leader, one of their leaders, Juma Namangani, was killed in bombing in Kunduz in 2001. And then they went to tribal areas, where again they were in close alliance with not only the Afghan Taliban, but also very closely allied with Al-Qaeda, and later on with what essentially we now call the Pakistani Taliban, the Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan, and some other factions. What happened was that over the past 10 years, the Pakistanis were doing these operations in various tribal districts, and they were not going into North Waziristan, which was, if you will call it, the main headquarters of most of these terrorist or militant networks, including the most dangerous part of the Taliban, which is the Haqqani network, the Arab Al-Qaeda organization, some extreme Pakistani militant organizations like the Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan, and also the IMU and its offshoots, which include the Islamic Jihad Union, Jamaat Ansarullah, Jandullah, and Jandal Khalifa. These are different names, but sure, they all can be included in the broader umbrella of the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan. Now, these people were driven from their main sanctuary in North Waziristan last year, and they went into southern Afghanistan. There are still a number of them operating in the southern province of Zabul. We have reported on this. And then some, they've also joined Taliban factions in other parts of Afghanistan, particularly in northern provinces. There are reports that the IMU, as an organization, joined the Islamic State late last year, sometime in the fall, in September or October. But what is important to remember is that their alliance, as the lawmaker from Kabul said, with the Taliban has not changed. They are closely embedded with the Taliban. They are looking for a new sanctuary in Afghanistan now, and that's why there is they're trying to carve out a sanctuary essentially in Badakhshan, which is strategically located close to Tajikistan, bordering Tajikistan and also Pakistan, and also in Kunduz, where recently there was a lot of fighting and probably hundreds of militants and Afghan civilians and soldiers died. So the IMU, in essence, is now this wandering group of militants.
From some time, we've been witnessing that there is something is coming in north. The conflict started from Faryab, then slowly it moved to Kunduz. Then lately, we are seeing increasing number of violence in Badakhshan and also in Badghis province. So how we can differentiate, I mean, the role of Central Asian militants? Yes, Taliban is there, and probably some people who align themselves with Daesh might be there. What is the number of Central Asian militants in those fighting? What role they are playing?
Well, I don't think that anybody can give you an exact accurate number of percentage of local and foreign fighters. But what is very clear is that something new is evolving in this region, and that's not very new, because I've been reporting on this particular development since 2010, when the IMU was for the first time, the reports emerged, and I reported from northern Afghanistan and from Kabul that the IMU is trying to carve these new sanctuaries in northern Afghanistan as a stepping stone to go back to Central Asia or to destabilize Central Asia. What has changed in northern Afghanistan is, and I think the lawmaker from Kabul will bail me out on this, is that the IMU or the Taliban have somehow been able to radicalize some locals among the non-Pashtun ethnic groups or communities in northern Afghanistan, particularly among the Uzbeks, because the IMU is primarily an Uzbek organization. Most of its followers or foot soldiers and leaders were Uzbek. And the Uzbeks are the largest ethnic group in Central Asia, we should remember. So they have been able to radicalize some people there in some of these regions. And that is why I don't think it's a strategic alliance. It's not like the Uzbek leadership has decided, but there are elements, and these might be village mullahs or disgruntled elements who have been radicalized through madrasa education or through other incentives. And a lot of these, just like the Pashtuns in southern Afghanistan who have cross-border connections, a lot of these Uzbek communities or Turkmen communities have also cross-border connections, memories of being connected to communities in Central Asia, despite the Iron Curtain there being there for 70 years. Yeah. So I think that is a new development, and the Afghan government has not paid enough attention. And not only the Afghan government, I think the international community, NATO in particular, failed to truly address this emerging threat.
Right. Bruce, I will come back to you just in a minute. First, let's go to Kabul. Ms. Chenki, is there anything surprise for you that officials and parliamentarians like you are increasingly taking the name of Central Asian militants, Chechens, Tajiks, and Uzbekistanis in recent fighting? Is there any surprise for you in this new development?
Well, actually not. Parliamentarian and women people always nationally and internationally will mention about the certain threats that exist and certain the Afghan security and stability, because this Chechen, Uzbek or Arab or Punjabi from Pakistan or these are all the correlation or the network of this international terrorist group. They are fighting against the government in Afghanistan. So we knew that this exists, and we always try to, as international community, take this issue seriously, because finally it reached different parts of our neighbors. So it was not a surprise, but the surprise is that nobody takes this concern seriously. And now everybody now is noticing what's going on with our northern border, with other Central Asian countries. Really, because when the Pakistan were forced to take them out of their territory or their controlled territory, so where they have to go? They enter Afghanistan and finally they reach different parts of Afghanistan to fight for the mission which they were tracked or what they were given, what can say, like a different mission to fight again. So it's a tremendous surprise. We knew that this finally will happen after the more serious and serious in this time.
Right. Bruce, you might wish to add something on this, if you like. But my question is, what is driving Central Asian militants to that part of the world? First of all, is there any surprise to you? And if not, what is driving them there?
Well, of course, I wouldn't say it's a surprise. And we know from our reporting last year that there already were groups of people who claim to be IMU that were in northwestern Afghanistan. I'm talking Faryab, Baghdiz, Jozjan, places like that. So they were there, and you know, I think it's no coincidence that after the Pakistani military started their offensive in North Waziristan, all of a sudden we saw more groups, and then they showed up in northeast Afghanistan, Badakhshan, Kunduz. So you know, it seems like they drove out the IMU that were, or many of the IMU members that were in North Waziristan, and they're now, yeah, I think Abu Bakr phrased it rightly, they're kind of wandering, you know, around northern Afghanistan. You know, and at the same time, we've seen that the problems in northwest Afghanistan, back to Faryab and those places, has gotten much worse, and they've gotten a new influx of fighters. And we know this from talking to local officials out there that it's not a question of just a few, you know, dozen or something scattered around all men, but now it's larger groups that have their families, which seems to indicate that these are part of the peoples that have been driven out from the Pakistani tribal areas and are now in northern central or northern Afghanistan. I would agree that their ultimate goal is probably to get back into Central Asia somehow, but since they can't live in North Waziristan at the moment, they're doing the best they can to find some place that they can settle and find temporary haven, which is northern Afghanistan. It's close to their home. As we've heard, their own ethnic people, you know, relatives are there. That's where all the Turkmen, the Uzbeks, and Tajiks, you know, are scattered around the north. So it would be natural for them to come to that area. They would be more likely to find someone that would sympathize with their cause and help them out a little bit. I think the one interesting thing about all this is there is no one from the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan who has called themselves leader and has articulated any kind of policy about what these people are doing in northern Afghanistan. We don't hear, you know, Abu Bakr mentioned Juma Namangani, and of course there was Tahrir Yoldash and others that followed him after he was killed. But we haven't had anyone that's come forward and said, you know, I am the leader of the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan, and our people are in northern Afghanistan to perform this particular function, which makes me believe that they're largely disorganized. They're extremely dangerous because they've had a decade or more of combat experience. We've heard from your audio tapes that these people are expert bomb makers. They know how to stage ambushes and attacks on military installations. We've seen that even in Pakistan. They seem to be, and I've used the phrase before, but they seem to be kind of guns for hire at the moment. The Taliban are their natural allies. So that's who they're gravitating to, because the Taliban can give them shelter and logistical support that they need in northern Afghanistan. But I'm not under the impression that they have any particular goal at the moment other than to survive.
Then I will go back, lawmaker Shenki, to you. But first of all, then if you listen to Afghan officials, Bruce, and they always tend to say that the objective of these militants are not in Afghanistan. They aim to Central Asia, as you heard in some of the audio segments that I have played earlier. Ms. Shenki, what are their plans? And are you in agreement with Afghan officials that those foreign militants are not aiming anything in Afghanistan, but their objective is Central Asia or other neighboring countries there?
Well, obviously not totally, but yes, it's true that the next mission for which they have to reach. And to reach to Central Asia, and of course, they have to be, like, provide safe home for themselves inside Afghanistan so they can target the Central Asian country or Iran or maybe other part, or some part of China. So it doesn't mean they will not attack the Afghans. See what's happening with Afghan civilians. But Afghan air work can see what's happening with Afghan security sectors. So it doesn't mean nothing will do nothing, but Afghans will just cross Afghanistan to reach Central Asia. There's a part of group which is Taliban specifically have a mission to fight against government they will. But these people also will have the support of the kitchen or like a certain Asian militant as well. And even the Arabs and the Pakistani they are fighting, and some of we have the proof, we have the evidence, we have the film, we have the, our intelligence arrest, lots of this terrorists which we admit they are foreigners but they fight inside Afghanistan. So for what purpose they are in Afghanistan? Actually, all I want to say, or to conclude my words like this, these people, which the radical, which they used by regional intelligence and by international intelligence for their own purpose, which they were created, maybe different group have a different final mission to reach, but definitely Afghanistan is not safe from them. They will also victimize Afghan and Afghan territories, and then they will go to their next mission.
That's interesting perspective. Still, we are talking in vague terms. We don't know the number of those militants, the foreign militants, especially the Central Asian, that are playing some role in Afghan insurgency. If you listen to some of the Central Asian government officials, I would say especially the Tajik officials, they would also say to you that there is not much of threat from Afghanistan to Central Asia, and Afghan officials are simply hyping up this threat to Central Asia from Afghan side just to get some attraction, some attention. What do you, Abu Bakr, say about this argument from the Central Asian aspect?
Well, I think the Central Asians, on the other one hand, are very happy that essentially the IMU, at the end of the day, is their is a main threat to their very survival. I mean, in case of Uzbekistan, they launched attack against Ivan Karimov in the 1990s. So I think they have been very happy during the past decade or so when the IMU was operating mainly in Pakistan and it was mainly fighting the Pakistani army.
Yeah.
And that's why I have seen a lot of these Central Asian experts, I mean, people very close to Central Asian governments or Russian officials and stuff, kind of underestimating the threat posed by IMU. They'll typically say that, oh, the IMU people are not more than a few hundred, they're not really very well trained. This is all propaganda in Afghanistan and Pakistan to get more international attention. But the truth is that if there is any region that is ripe to the kind of militancy that these people are doing, then Central Asia is an obvious target. These are countries with no democracy, with kind of these old, aging Soviet elite that has been in power since the break of the Soviet Union for a quarter century now. So I think it's a lot of that is primarily motivated by self-interest and not by the reality of the what is happening on ground. But one other thing that I want to draw your attention to is the larger thing that we should remember is that after 9/11, the way the international community conceived the conflict in Afghanistan was to eradicate or fight against a certain number of individuals which they thought were radical or extremist or terrorist or whatever. They never tried to address some of the underlying conflict. Like, for example, in Central Asia, there is an underlying conflict between what kind of political system they should be in these countries after the fall of the Soviet Union. There is a very old conflict between Afghanistan and Pakistan, the Durand Line conflict, if you can call it that, or the non-rec. So these conflicts were never addressed, and this was purely dealt as a security issue in terms of going against or arresting and killing specific individuals. That's why we are seeing these group are not going away, because if there is more oppression in Central Asia, there will always be some disgruntled people who would like to join some jihad somewhere. And we have seen, and IMU is a very good example of that. We have seen, at least the report that I've seen, it says that there are now thousands of IMU or Central Asian militants working for the Islamic State, fighting for the Islamic State.
In Syria
and Iraq. Mm. So if those reports are true, that clearly tells you that this problem is going to stay here unless the kind of political dialogue or political process that we are seeing the Afghan government is trying to push for or have been trying to create during the past few years. And there are a lot of criticism against those efforts. But that ultimately is going to take care of these kind of threats.
Bruce, I will come back to you. Lawmaker Shenke, so when Afghan officials say that these groups are posing serious threat to Central Asia, there is no exaggeration from your point of view?
Well, just what we say, that Soviet, radical, or extremist, whatever they are not only threat to us, they are threat to the Central Asian, definitely they are also threat to the international community as well. So these people are not only fighting or legitimizing their fight against Afghan, but why we are paying the price, also because of the international community presence in Afghanistan as well. So this terrorist will target other countries, not only Afghanistan. Also, you can actually be one of the targets for coalition.
Bruce, what's your take on that? You know, you study Central Asia as much as I do. When you listen to some of those countries, I obviously see some kind of concern from Turkmenistan side as they are fencing the border. But when you listen to our Tajik colleagues here, they would say to you they don't think about much about this kind of threat that are being hyped out from Afghanistan. What's your take on this?
Well, first I think that Abu Bakr made a great point that the Central Asian governments, their best defense would have been to court public support and to get their population on their side. That ultimately, a content people that feel that their interests are well served and at least have a fairly good life are not likely to listen to any of these other kind of people. But the Central Asian governments, unfortunately, don't look at it that way. They would rather confront the security threat and keep tight control over their own society. It's kind of a policy that's bound to fail, because every time that they sense a security threat, their reaction is to go out, arrest people, interfere in people's lives, thinking that they're suspected of some kind of connections to these kind of groups, and end up making more enemies than friends. So I feel that they're coming at it from the wrong point of view. It would be better if they would improve social conditions and address the needs of their own population, and then they would have a public support. They wouldn't have to worry about these things so much. Now, as concerned the militants and the Tajiks downplaying this, given that there is social inequality in Central Asia, I think you can't. There's no way these groups by themselves are going to be able to overrun the Central Asian governments and overthrow them. What they can do is create a lot of instability and suspicion within particular individual Central Asian countries. I would say that the threat now is much greater for that than it was even 4 or 5 years ago. And the reason I'm saying that is because, again, when these people had safe haven in Pakistan, it didn't have the motivation to try to get home that they do now. They have no place to live, and that's why we see them, you know, trying to find places to settle in northern Afghanistan. I think from their point of view, the goal of returning home to Central Asia and you know, creating some kind of niche for themselves there is probably stronger than it has been in a long time, because all of a sudden they are nomads, effectively. They're wandering around with guns. And they only have, their options are to try to fit in with northern Afghanistan, where they're bound to be attacked by government soldiers all the time, or pursue their ultimate goal, which was their original goal of overthrowing the Central Asian governments and trying to create a caliphate, which right now probably looks a lot better to them than it has in maybe the last 10 years, because really that's, with Pakistan denied to them, that's really their only option. They can either try to stay in Afghanistan and fight it out and join with Taliban, which some of them seem to have done. We got these lone wolf groups that declare their allegiance to the Islamic State militant group, but we have no idea if they're speaking for the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan or if they're just one particular group with no other means of finding aid. So I would think that actually it's erroneous to believe on the part for the Central Asian governments to believe that the threat is less or not existent at all and not existent to them at the moment, because actually it's probably greater than it has been, like I said, in the last 10 years.
Right. Bruce, you just mentioned their possible goal, that you said they are much closer to their goal in their country. Part of their goal is to go back to their own countries and make government of their own. But on the other hand, I also don't like to be alarmist and want to say that sometimes I also think that they might be just a desperate people driven out from their sanctuaries in Pakistan, and the only thing they are looking for is a shelter, a place to survive. How fair is it to talk about even if they have any goal at all?
I agree with that 100% that they have been driven out of their safe havens and they are trying to survive. The question is going to be how well can they fit in with, in the areas of northern Afghanistan. The economic situation in northern Afghanistan is not great already. I can't imagine that they could, with many people anyway, would want to see an influx of foreign fighters into their region who all of a sudden decided that was going to be their homeland. Let's not forget that the IMU in Pakistan, when they were been there, have created a lot of problems. You know, they did have allies that were the Afghan Taliban, the Pakistan Taliban, Al Qaeda, but they got in all kinds of fights with the local tribes. Some of them, you know, dozens certainly were killed. So they weren't, even among the people in the tribal areas of Pakistan, they were not popular, and they caused a lot of difficulties out there. And there's no reason to believe that the same thing is not going to happen in northern Afghanistan. You know, again, these people are well armed, and if they want to try to just take somebody's village and make it their own, they're going to make a lot of enemies in northern Afghanistan. And we've seen that they've done exactly that in Pakistan. I have no reason to believe they're going to change their attitude.
Right. Abubakar, you want to say something? Jump in, please.
Well, one of the things that we have not discussed so far is the whole issue of drug trade.
Yeah.
In Afghanistan, as we know, is the biggest producer of poppy, opium, and then heroin, of course. And very little of that is actually consumed in Afghanistan. So it all goes to Western markets. A lot of that, Central Asia is a main kind of path or
yeah.
So that drug trafficking, one of the IMU, when I was talking to some of the people looking into these issues in Kabul this week, they're telling me that one of the things that the IMU might be doing is to take control of that drug trade route through Central Asia, which will of course take care of a lot of their financial worries, because in Pakistan they were mostly relied on these kind of criminal activities, but of course the tribal economy is not great. It's the most one of the most impoverished and underdeveloped regions of Pakistan. So they were mostly reliant on kidnappings for ransom and those kinds of activities. So in northern Afghanistan, they I think are also one of the motivations might be to have a share with something that the Taliban or Taliban groups in a lot of many parts of Afghanistan, for example, in the parts that border Pakistan or parts that border Iran, have a share in that kind of trade, and also in the opium poppy cultivation. And I'm not saying by only means that the Taliban are the only people who have a pie in that business, because some officials or very powerful people in the Afghan government in the past or former officials might also have similar stakes in that trade. The other issue that we should not undermine is, and I think the lawmaker from Kabul pointed to it, is that a lot of the conflicts in Afghanistan can be termed as what we call the proxy conflicts, in which a regional state supports a militant network or a warlord to advance its interests in Afghanistan, or what they perceive as interests in Afghanistan. In the case of Central Asia, the Central Asian militants are a very good candidate for that, because anybody with money can make them attack their so-called enemies in Pakistan. And that's why the Pakistani officials at least have time and again claimed that, for instance, India is involved. I mean, we don't have seen any evidence of that. The Afghans, of course, always blame Pakistan to be behind what is happening behind the Taliban and a host of other similar groups. And now with the rise of IS, we should remember that the Islamic State is the richest terrorist network in history. Right. So there might be some way that these people are getting funding and are part of kind of the future recalibration of militant networks in this region.
Right. You just pointed at an interesting point, Abu Bakr, that they are a candidate for any organization which wants to have a proxy fight in that part of the world. So, lawmaker Shinke, so what is the future looks like in that part of the country, in northern Afghanistan? Where are we heading now in regard to Central Asia or the foreign militants there?
Well, I think, of course, if all the countries like Afghanistan to tackle this issue, I think in the world is the biggest problem. But definitely it's the biggest challenge, because Afghan security is not very well trained, it's not very well equipped. And even we don't have reinforced security in the country. So we need more support for our security sector. We need more collaboration and coordination from regional countries, as also from our international partners like America, which we signed our bilateral security agreement to help us to how to face and tackle this biggest challenge, not only facing threatening in Afghanistan, but definitely threatening the regional and international countries as well.
Right. You pointed out about the solution, lawmaker Shinke, but in terms of the security concerns that are developing in northern Afghanistan, what do you expect more to happen there?
Well, of course, it's the biggest challenge for Afghans and for Central Asian countries. If every country do not take this issue seriously and help Afghanistan, it will be a challenge for every country, not only for Afghans.
Sure. Abu Bakr, you might want to jump in. I mean, we see it started from Faryab, it spelled to Kunduz, then Badghis, then now Badakhshan. We are talking about these bloody events. In terms of this turmoil, what do you see the upcoming 6 months there?
Well, I think in the upcoming 6 months, we might see a lot of violence, unfortunately. But we also should keep an eye on what happens in this very nascent kind of peace process between the Afghan Taliban and Kabul. We have seen that the meeting, which was of course an informal meeting in Doha recently, earlier this week, kind of produced more progress than people had expected. And that is a very positive indicator. We should also keep in mind that the security calculations in Pakistan, the paradigm, appears to be changing. Pakistan is trying to court Afghanistan. It's trying to cooperate with Afghanistan. Of course, Pakistan wants to be loyal to or take care of what it perceives as its national interests. But that's a very good beginning. And we are also seeing that the Central Asians, the Chinese are investing in Pakistan. So there is a possibility now. I mean, for example, China, Russia, India, even Pakistan now agree on something that they don't want to give these non-state actors a very big role. Now, the question is, can they come up with a mechanism or a treaty or some kind of regional cooperation initiative that will make it impossible for these kinds of group to thrive and survive? That is a major question. I don't see that question being addressed in the next 6 months.
Right, right. Bruce, what should be done?
Well, you know, I mean, if you were asking me to predict something, I would say that we're going to see a lot of instability in northern Afghanistan. Now, I agree, though, that, you know, with the Afghan peace process seeming to creep forward a little bit and stuff, for what it's worth, it might be time for the Central Asian governments, particularly the Uzbek government, to make an offer of a general amnesty and with programs, guarantees that these people won't be hurt. Now, there's a lot of hardcore Islamic movement of Uzbekistan fighters who have been out there for 10 years or more. They're not going to take it. But, you know, certainly as far as we know, that these people are there with all their families. So if they made the offer and said, you can send your families back, we're not going to hurt them. You know, we'll get that. They're going to have to go through some kind of courses or vetting process to make sure that they're not radicals in our country and that they understand that they have to abide by our laws. But in fact, you can come disarm, and you won't be hurt. You know, like I said, the credibility of these governments is pretty low. I have no idea how many people would take an offer like that seriously. But for what it's worth, it would be perhaps a gesture of peace at this time, along with the peace talks, the inter-Afghan peace talks that are going on, might go some ways toward diffusing some of the tensions in northern Afghanistan.
Thank you, Bruce. We could continue talking about the discussion which is currently going on between Afghan officials and the Taliban. Who are those Talibans are, which fraction they represent too, but that's another story. And in the meantime, I think we also lost our last guest from Afghanistan. Thank you very much. In absence, I would say lawmaker Shinke Karokhil from Kabul, Abu Bakr Siddiq, our Afghanistan expert and also editor of Gandhara website, Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlak Awozi, the Central Asian expert. Thank you very much for being part of this discussion. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.